Chapter 4 of Revelation is what we would see if we could open our eyes, if we could see. We would see in the this is the perfect seeing. But if what would happen is we would open our eyes and we'd see all kinds of little weird things and creatures and shit that was between us and this image that chapter 4 is about. There's an incredibly important phrase here that none of the stuff that we teach here will ever make any sense until you understand it. So let's go there. We start in verse 1. He's just saying the last verse of 3:22, he that hath an ear, let him hear. He that hath an ear, let him hear. Remember, the process is always what you hear is what you see. What you see is what you do without any effort. That's the inner relationship of the senses. That's why the first thing must be the circumcised ear, that you might hear. Then you will see. If you see, you will do automatically. So he that hath an ear, let him hear what the Spirit saith unto the churches. After this I looked, and behold, a door was opened in heaven, and the first voice which I heard was, as it were, of a trumpet talking with me. That one always gets me. I think that's funnier now.
Yeah.
Which said, come up hither, and I will show thee things which must be hereafter. Now, the word hereafter there doesn't mean like, it's not the word that says, this is what's going to happen in the next millennium. It means that which is going to happen next. It's like, the sufferings aren't, we suffer in order that we might perceive glory, but it's not like for some future day, it's instantly the moment you see. You understand? All right. And immediately I was in the Spirit, and behold, a throne was set in heaven, and one sat on the throne. And he that sat was to look upon like a jasper and a sardine stone. Okay, so now we got God. He's talking to a trumpet, and he's got God up there looking like jaspers and sardines. Thrones. Stones.
What's a sardine stone?
Huh?
What's a sardine stone?
I think it's a diamond, but I've forgotten. We're going to get into that. Another... There's all these stones, right? We're not talking about stoned here. We're talking about stones. You got it? We're not talking about gonads. We're talking about diamonds and stuff and gems. But when we get to them, each one of them has, it says that each one of us are as a stone. And we'll get into that more later. And he that sat was to look upon like a jasper and a sardine stone. And there was a rainbow round about the throne in sight like unto an emerald. And round about the throne were 24 seats. And upon the seats I saw 24 elders sitting, clothed in white raiment, and they had on their heads crowns of gold. Now that's the head of the courses. You remember I've told you there are 24 courses of priests in the temple. And there are 24 courses of general offices in the body. I mean, I can know with a certainty that every one of you have one of these 24 general courses as your destiny to fulfill. You were created to fulfill one of these 24 things. You understand? You've in life, in the natural, you've been trying to play the counterfeit role. So, and out of the throne proceeded lightnings and thunderings and voices, and there were seven lamps of fire burning before the throne, which are the seven spirits of God. And before the throne there was a sea of glass like unto crystal. And in the midst of the throne and around about the throne were four beasts full of eyes before and behind. And the first beast was like a lion, and the second beast like a calf, and the third beast had a face as a man, and the fourth beast was like a flying eagle. Now, what you're going to see is this is Jesus Christ. And these are the main aspects of him, but they also conform to the four main points, cardinal points of the compass, as they relate to one of the four, each of the 12 tribes. And it's all connected. There's a big mystery that right into that little verse. And the third beast was like a face of man, the fourth beast was like a flying eagle, and the four beasts had each of them six wings round about them, and they were full of eyes within. And they rest not day and night, saying, Holy, 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 Lord all God, the Lord God Almighty, which was and is to come. Now, the predicate here is that if you could really open your eyes and see, you'd cease this weird thing. I mean, it's pretty weird. I mean, to our minds. And the net effect of this thing would be that it would blow apart whatever else you were thinking about at the moment. And you couldn't hold any thought that you were thinking. You couldn't hold on to any problem that you had. You couldn't hold on to any concern that you had and see this scene. You understand? Maybe you don't. This would overpower you. This is like no other scene that's possible to see in the face of the universe. I mean, this is sensory overload to the nth degree. There would be no possibility that any of your little neurons running around in that skull could have any time for anything else other than to apprehend and comprehend this. I mean, if your toenail hurt, you would forget about it. If your gonads were falling off, you would forget about it when you saw this. Because this is sensory overload. Nothing else would exist.
Ed doubts that.
Huh?
Ed doubts.
Well, Ed listens to those wimps from Trinity Ministries. That what really pissed her off probably is that our organization is called Trinity Foundation. Anyway, so you got the scene a little bit here. We got sensory overload to the nth degree. I'm glad I don't know what that means. And the four beasts, which each of them had each of them six wings about him, and they were full of eyes within. And they rest not day or night, saying, Holy, 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 Lord God Almighty, which was, and is to come. And when those beasts give glory and honor and thanks to him that sat on the throne, who liveth forever and ever, the 24 elders fall down before him that sat on the throne, and worship him that liveth forever and ever, and cast their crowns before the throne, saying, Now, I said all that to say this, the next sentence. Thou art worthy, O Lord, to receive glory and honor and power, for thou hast created all things, and for thy pleasure they are and were created. That means that there is no condition that can exist in your life or in the history of the universe that can have any other purpose than the pleasure of God. You understand? No, you don't. That means that God finds pleasure in all things, and because he finds pleasure in all things, you in him, Christ in you, you in Christ, are to equally apprehend and find pleasure in all things. Now, this is the most amazing thing if you stop and think about it. Think of the worst thing that's going on in your life. The mystery of God says you are to find pleasure in it, not in some perverted, sadomasochistic way, but in another way that man doesn't really know much about. It can elevate you at any point to his seeing as opposed to your seeing. He said, hear this, Thou hast created all things, and for thy pleasure they are and were created. Now think about it. You can say, well, that's easy for God to say. He doesn't. He really does. He never put up with this shit. He didn't have PMS. All things are pleasing to God and therefore potentially pleasing to us. This is unthinkable from your view. Therein is the reason time exists. So that those things can be transferred to pleasurable. How can they be pleasurable? I'll tell you how they can't be pleasurable. They cannot be pleasurable. All things cannot be pleasurable if you are judging for yourself which is good and which is evil. Understand that? Now it comes back to the very first. That the only reason that man fell is because he tasted of that fruit of the tree of knowledge of good and evil, to elevate himself. Now, I hope now you can see how the only thing you are ever really concerned about is your own self-divinity. And you do it in the name of feeling or honor or justice or trying to get it right or fairness or you don't do any of those things for any of those reasons. You do it for self-divinity. Now, the moment you can see the fruit, you realize that if you're doing this for self, if you're living around doing stuff for self-divinity, you're in a direct battle with God and you're going to lose big time. I mean, you're not going to lose just a little bit. You're not battling some, you know, stupid little wimp rabbi. You're battling God. Your leg didn't go up and down. Potentially everything in the universe you can find pleasure in. But you can find pleasure, no sustained pleasure in anything if you cannot find pleasure in sustained pleasure in everything. Well, therein is the secret of pleasure. The secret, pleasure is a great word. Have you ever been in debt? I mean, I'm talking about debt, where you were convinced, I mean, $100 is, you know, really not a lot. But if you don't have it, it's a whole bunch. And if you don't have it and something evil is going to happen to you because you don't have it, then how in God's name can you find pleasure in that moment? Pleasure. The end result of being transformed by the renewing of our mind, the end result of the renewal of your mind is the state of pleasure in everything. So that there is never a state of being in which you find no pleasure. That's an easy test. All you have to do is look at your countenance. You got it? So if you're not in a state of pleasure, you're not in the will of God. Joy is just a higher degree of pleasure. Joy is concentrated pleasure. Ecstasy is another aspect of pleasure. Worship and ecstasy are supposed to be synonymous. We are to be in a state of ecstasy in worship. You understand? All of them have to do with Pleasure is a sustained thing. A believer should never be in a position where there is no pleasure. Joy comes then in the moments of supreme revelation. That's just concentrated pleasure. Worship is super concentrated pleasure or ecstasy. That's your heritage. That's what you rightfully own because of the birth, death, resurrection of Christ. Am I talking Greek to you? The only reason you can experience no pleasure is because you are so fucking far in debt that you cannot experience the moment. You have sold all your tomorrows for an assumed pleasure that was going to take place maybe yesterday, and there can be no moment now. So you're living in usury. You're fighting with everything in you to keep paying on the debt that you've already gotten into for pleasure that may or may not happen sometime to you in the future. That's the trick of the God of this world. He has gotten you so far into debt by his usury that pleasure for you is impossible no matter what it is that Christ has done. You understand? So you walk around in a state of heaviness. The burden of your debt is on your shoulders. You can't afford joy, you can't afford even pleasure, because it's all been paid. You've gone into debt for that which never occurred. How do you get out of debt?
Declare bankruptcy.
That's it. You spiritually say, I declare bankruptcy. You have a witness with the authority tell you that, okay, as of this moment, you owe nothing. Your debt is clear. This can't be faked.
God, I remember so clearly when I passed under the rod and you and John said that to me. I mean, it just wiped me out. I had never heard anything. It just so totally moved me. It totally freed me. It was awesome.
Thou art worthy, O Lord, to receive glory and honor and power. For thou hast created all things, and for thy pleasure they are created. Therefore, everything, every moment is potentially pleasing to you. Now that's the mystery of you. Do you understand? Until this is all tied together with forgiveness. Because by definition, if you are in a state of unforgivenness, that means that there was a moment that you defined in which there was no pleasure. If you are in a state of debt, it means that there was an infinite number of moments that you defined that were in no pleasure and had to go into debt to get pleasure. We're not talking necessarily about financial debt, however it always follows. The saddest part of my job, from one sense, is annually looking at people's financial condition and knowing how they are deceived by money and purchasing and debt. mortgaged everything for something that doesn't exist. You want to buy a new car. The rule of 72 says every... Do you understand how quickly that works? You know what the rule of 72 is on debt? Well, if you... Like credit card debt is normally about 22%. That means every... If you divide 22 into 72, and that gives you the amount of time it takes to double what you owe. In other words, if you're an investor, the rule of 72 works for you, and you can become very wealthy. If you're a debtor, the rule of 72 is working against you, and you can't ever get out of debt. I mean, some of you have been paying debt onto debt onto debt in the natural, but think what you're doing spiritually. How much of your future have you mortgaged for an assumed state of happiness? Does anybody look? Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Give me an example. See if you know what you're talking about. Oh yeah, I know what you're talking about. Give me an example.
Okay, marriage. I mean, I'm talking about emotionally going into debt for what I think is going to give me pleasure, give me joy, give me happiness up the road. Radio, going into debt. Because I'm where I'm at and I should be somewhere else. You know, I mean, ratings aren't right. It's not this, it's not that. It's going into debt because I want it to be different. I'm thinking about the future and I can't be happy in the moment because the moment isn't right. Because I'm paying to this right moment that is in the future that in truth doesn't exist.
But the right moment was created by your self-divinity and by nothing else. Therefore, there can be, by definition, no right moment in the future except that which was created by a false divinity. No matter how righteous your conception of it may be. This is the underlining principle why Christ said, take no thought for tomorrow. It is not possible to be in a state of being in which you are considering tomorrow in which you are not going into debt.
That means that today we're living out of pleasure.
Yeah, because you're paying for the debt from yesterday. And now you're going into further debt because you're a being that needs pleasure, at least the sense of pleasure. So you go into debt in your future thoughts, i.e. you live for the weekend or you live until you take... The pleasure has been taken out of your work because you've divorced it from a sense of purpose. So you live for weekends, you live for vacations, you live for 5 o'clock. You understand? That's the evidence that you've gone into debt. The evil of it is beyond comprehension. That's why you look forward to vacations. Or you have to have some event, some time in the future to look forward to. Otherwise, you will die from being overburdened. The weight of the moment will kill you. Unless you can imagine, you and your imagination, you get out of the moment by looking forward to a future time. And when the moment you look forward to it, you put yourself in more debt. You can't leave this moment without paying a debt of an extremely high percentage to the God of this world. He is the rightful owner of the next second. And he will charge you an exorbitant, usurious rate for you to go into that next moment for any reason. That's why God hates the idea, the religious idea of what's going to happen tomorrow when I, in the great by and by, I'm going to heaven. That's the plan of Satan himself. Because it causes the hearers to go in debt for the moment. And when they get to the time where the great judgment seat, the book will be open. It says, my God, you owe $10 billion to the God of this world. What are you going to pay it with? And the accuser will stand up and say, they have nothing. I own them. You understand? You with impunity spend your life in the future. But it's not with impunity. Every second you spend in the future is a debt of an extremely high usurious rate that's being collected and accounted by the God of this world. Every second you spend in a place other than here, wherever that here is, you owe a mind-blowing debt because you're trying to, you got to pay for the transportation plus the usury. You'll forget about this in the next second, but someday you will remember it. Please, please, I beg of you, if there's something that you don't agree with or something you don't understand, tell me. Because the problem with preaching is, if you have heard it, you're held accountable for it. That's why by the foolishness of preaching, you're saved. Do you understand that?
Foolishness of whose part?
The mind's part. What I just said to you is stupid.
See, now, all pervasive good. I can't imagine any other way of thinking, really, than, you know, looking forward to tomorrow or later on tonight or the weekend or something.
Can you see how evil that is? I promise you that there is an account made of those moments. And usury will be charged. There's a component within you that knows that, and therefore you're totally burdened by it. You've got the weight of the world on your shoulders. And you sit around and talk about Jesus as though he were someone that was sanctifying your contract with the God of this world. He's not going to sanctify your contract. He came, he is now, so that you never again have to enter into the contract for the next minute, for anything. Now, the reason that forgiveness is so tied into the mystery, where God says, if you can't forgive, that means he can't forgive you, and you're locked back into the payment of the usury. The reason that exists is because forgiveness, in its beauty, in its majesty, in its grand simplicity, is the test of whether or not you understand what I just said. What you do with a truce is you go into debt, not just to the God of this world, you go into debt to that person that you're in a truce with. So now you've got double usury. And that payment will be demanded both from the God of this world and from the person that you're in a truce with. Now the reason this is so evil is because this is the thing, this is the main function, this is the raison d'etre, however you say that, d'etre that Molech had, was to teach you how not to forgive. Molech's purpose was to teach you what an acceptable truce was. If you're a male, you learned what an acceptable truce was from your mother. If you're a female, you learned what an acceptable truce was from your father. It's so simple. All of this complicated stuff comes back down to, is there anyone who you haven't forgiven from the heart? from the heart means a whole lot different than a truce. Aren't you sick of usury? And what are you going to do? Why are you going to get into it some more? Well, it's just the only way I can do. That's the only thing I can do. It's the only thing a cat can do, or a dandelion. Dandelion. Where the hell did that come?
We have no idea what you meant, but keep going.
Sounded good.
Cat, dandelion.
Lion.
It's a feline.
Bird lard. Come on. You know, I'm sitting here, and one of the things that's going through my head is I saw a bunch of this last night where people heard what you said. I could tell they heard what you said. And then comes the but. It won't take care of what's going to happen later tonight. It won't take care of tomorrow. It won't solve the problem.
And that's just so bullshit.
It's just
like that. Like
it's the
that.
Same, it's the same damn thing.
That's exactly the same. It's played out in the drama.
But it won't work tomorrow.
Do you see what this does? It divorces you from the economy that you're involved in. That's why. This is why there is no form of government that can ever work. Communism can't work. Capitalism can't work. Free enterprise can't work. Feudalism can't work. King stuff can't work. King stuff.
Monarchy.
Huh? Monarchy.
Butterfly stuff can't work.
Yeah. None of them can work because, by definition, all of them will end up in a state of usury because that's what they're... adherents are the subjects are in the spirit, and it has to be seen in the natural. No matter what, that's why there's every 50 years there's been a crash of some kind. Because no form of government can work. No form of economy can work.
Is that true every 50 years?
Look throughout history.
Well, then that corresponds with giving back the land.
Of course. That's why it exists. That's why we have by redemption, by redeeming the time, any time that there is an asset tie, then I can proclaim with the power of God, this is the Jubilee year. You understand? That's what it means to bind and loose. But it has to be seen internally. You know, we've talked about before that we support, you know, our whole society is devoted towards pleasure industries for tomorrow. Think about it. What they call the service industries, we don't produce anything anymore. They're service industries. And what they really are is pleasure industries. The fact that all these are divorced from your work and your home, they're divorced in time, they're divorced in space, so there's no pleasure where you are. And then the mystery, the weird thing is, you go to the pleasure industries, the only reason they grow so rapidly is it proves they don't work. So you have to go more in debt for something that doesn't work by definition. Okay, Daryl, what's the matter?
Oh man, you beat me to the punch.
It's a deflated feeling.
Well, I just ramble because I don't know what else to say. These are the things that keep coming to my head, and I think it has to do with language. Actually, when I first sat down in the chair here this evening, I started getting all distraught and tense, and I don't know why.
I think you're afraid you sold out. And everything else is gone. Nothing else is. Everything else is a cloud now because you're afraid you sold out. It may have been in San Francisco, it may not have been, but. Does that compute?
The only thing that I thought of in connection with that is I am afraid sometimes. Like this book that, you know, that they wanted me to read. I read the book, I'm almost all the way through it. I can see the stuff in the book, and it's so close to what I perceive as the reality of things, that the manipulation of the things that are available in that book are easy. And I'm afraid of it. I know I don't want to. So I've thought about it. I never thought of the term sold out, but I've thought of it in terms of, you know, you're talking about usury too. It's like, I've sold myself to a jillion things, you know, to about everything that came by. You know, I was sitting here, you know, I know I'll slow down, I'm not trying to say, oh, I, you know, I don't do that anymore, but largely there aren't any that I know of right now looming things out there that I'm waiting on to get, you know.
No, yes there is, and the looming thing that you're waiting on to get is the great manipulator, the great controller. And there's a part of that that's extremely attractive to you.
Mm-hmm. Like it would be pacifying.
But the thing that you have to hear is that you can't make a mistake. I mean, I don't... The thing that used to happen with me when I first began to see the majesty and the implications of what we're about, I mean, it was awesome. And I was alone. You've all heard the story. Well, you know, I started thinking about it. I said, my God, with this knowledge, there's nothing in the universe I couldn't do. There's no political office that I couldn't attain to. There's no power that I couldn't grasp. Because this is the essence of why time and space exist. And so I started playing with that. You know, I started pushing things around there and doing this. And all of a sudden it came to me. Then I started, in many ways, I had the same kind of thing about, I figured out that if I was stronger than God, then I didn't want any part of this God. And so essentially I simply said, I have to follow whatever there is within me, Father, without regard to its implications. And that's what I did. The only difference is my fear had form. Your fear is a cloud. But it's still... I promise you, you're not stronger than God. I promise you, He can open doors and He'll shut doors. Just play. You can be free to play in it. You understand?
Amen.
You can be free to play. Let me tell you something. The way, you know what, the difference between, there's all kinds of synonyms for words. You know, how do we know, like God is love and God is spirit and God is this? Walk in the spirit. What the hell does that mean? One synonym for spirit that we never have talked about before is pleasure. Spirit is pleasure. Now, you don't have to... You can afford to play. I think you know what that means.
I'm afraid.
Well, so what? So the only reason you're afraid is because you want to be righteous and do the right thing.
That's right.
Okay, well, fuck righteousness and just play. That sounds... You can... huh?
I can do that.
Okay, that's... Okay.
I'll think I
can. Just play.
That's funny.
All right, I got some really weird things I want
to
do.
Oh, that's all right.
You're good for the best.
You can do nothing against the truth.
Tomorrow morning, you're going to write on your desk a lot of fuck righteousness.
Just play.
Yeah.
No, I mean, do you see, stop a minute and see what kind of a a gain that was. Just those last few minutes.
Why?
Well, I mean, how much righteousness you could get and how sad you could get over it.
All right. I don't really...
Okay, we can forget about it. It's gone as far as the east is from the west. Just play. He's your life. That's enough.
Okay, that's enough. I...
You're crazy.
Pepper sticker. That's fuck righteousness.
Just one.
What do you understand?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do you understand how quickly you can gain righteousness by worrying about whether or not this is going to happen or that's going to happen? So you get you. What you do is really dumb stuff. Is that it's not even pleasurable, but you go into usury for it. Mm-hmm. You go to usury for righteousness.
All the time.
I mean, all you have to do is look at the Pharisees to see that. I mean, the idea that we could just be explosive and abandoned without worrying about whether you're going to make a mistake or not is unbelievable. Those dorks, I still...
That's what really pissed him off.
That's what pissed him off last night really in that program. I mean,
when you said the government sucks.
That was the one that bothered me, too.
That's why I mentioned it so many. I couldn't believe you said that.
Well, it does.
Well, I know, but I just couldn't believe you said it. You had a jacket and tie on.
But I had Levi's on.
Oh,
but I had Levi's.
That's a man with a collar.
You wear coveralls to do that. You know,
everyone
sucks.
Yeah, but those guys in the back row were all the homeless guys. They were applauding me.
They know the government sucks.
And I told them they had the greatest BS detector of anybody in the world. That they were the fortunate ones, these ones down here were the worst ones, you know.
They were BS'd like you were playing the crowd.
What?
Like a violin.
Like a violin?
Like a violin.
So when you start frothing at the mouth, the people in the front rows can't.
Never be on with a dog or Ollie.
Never be on with a dog or Ollie?
Yeah, a dog or no. A kid, a dog, a kid, or an Ollie. That's a rule of showbiz.
There was a guy a couple years ago that wrote this article. His name is Wendell Berry. He's up there in my favorite writers. He wrote this article for Harper's, March of 1987. And he says, this is some of the things he said. He said, our workplaces are given over to production. Our dwelling places are given over to consumption. Our landscapes are defeated. Our air is polluted. Our land, the farms, are raped. Our suburbs are subjugated to human purposes. Our water is polluted. The people and the nations are in economic debt. The one problem is usury. Do you understand? Let's assume that you just a couple hundred years ago, there was a whole class of people that thought any work was ridiculous, and that was true for centuries, generations, that work was performed by slaves, or by subjects, or by Levites.
They were called the Norwegians.
Norwegians. Vegans.
That is true.
The aristocrats.
My dad still bitches about that.
You know, I mean, We are in a... I mean, just think how confused we are. You get guilty if you don't work. You get guilty if you don't punish yourself at work.
Guys like Perot, they take pride in their continuing to struggle and fight and work long hours, and they make tons of money out of it.
But he never even... I know him. He never took pleasure in work.
Yeah, but he says he does.
Oh, sure he does. No, but the people that make money, none of them work. The people that have the true wealth, there's never nobody's ever worked for true wealth.
And I was at the accountant yesterday. He showed me a guy, Malcolm showed me an account thing he just filled out, and the guy was paying $427,000 in taxes this year. That's his income tax return. And he doesn't work at all. He owns some blocks downtown and he owns the land. He bought the land on Preston Road North for $18,000. It's now worth $7 million.
Well, but yeah, just, we've got this system wrong, and we are a product of this system. True wealth is never created by work. That was a Calvinistic, Protestant, Pharisaical attitude that was brought over from Europe. I mean, in history, true wealth never gained wealth by working. People, what?
These night editing deals that I'm doing, let me see the other side. And I used to always think, you know, that the guys at the top work their butts off the paper. They got the easiest jobs in the world.
They don't do anything.
Everybody else does. But
absolutely.
It's like, I mean, people at my level, and even, I don't even have to work near as hard as I used to. I mean, people who are, you know, people who make the least work the fucking hardest.
Yeah.
You know, the guys with glass offices in the back, that's a piece of cake. You know, it's the damnest thing. It's lunch.
When I started out in radio, I bet I worked 12 hours a day and I made $450 a month in Abilene. I dubbed every commercial, everything that came through.
It's crazy. We ought to pay the people at the bottom more than they pay the people at the top.
All right.
Remember when you were a little kid and you played games, you took great pleasure in winning. But then some dork came along and caused you to feel guilty, and then you started sympathizing with the loser. Remember that?
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah. Root for the underdog. In fact, there was a cartoon called
Underdog. Yeah, but he wasn't really an underdog.
But stop a minute. The reason that competition exists, it's a picture. The reason that sports exists, it exists as a picture to show you that there's but one winner. Take pleasure in winning. I mean, all of that crap about sympathizing with a loser, that's just bullshit.
It's people from Denver.
That's just the Swedes.
Sweet.
Yeah.
I remember when I first heard that you're supposed to lose to men, like they're playing checkers or whatever. You're supposed to lose to men. I always thought, that's bullshit.
Yeah.
Lose when I lose.
I mean, do you understand? I mean.
Well, I mean, I've never played checkers. Such a racist.
Can you see how our way of thinking is totally screwed?
I'm waiting for the seminar on money.
Sorry to interrupt, but I just realized what an incredible racist joke. Only you could take a race, another race of blonde-haired, blue-eyed people and put them down.
Yeah, the Swedes.
The Swedes are like, no good.
They're no good.
They're tall and straight.
Sweet. No, but they got heavy features.
Yeah. Their pastry isn't that good.
Oh, they have bad pastry.
No, it's flourable.
That's racist.
With this refined artistic
thing. I'll just take that out.
Oh, that's really funny. As we came home, you know, the other night, and I had such a good game at poker, and Liz goes, I don't want to play poker anymore. So why, Liz? I've lost the last 5 weeks in a row. Jeez, poker is no fun to her right now. I'm mad.
It's our rightful inheritance to live under the law of grace and mercy and nothing else. And in that is total pleasure. And it's our rightful inheritance to know that as with God, all things were created and are created for His pleasure, and therefore we can have pleasure in all things that were and are. We cannot, we're forbidden, as he is, to have pleasure in things that will be.
Will we what?
Pleasure in things future that will stuff. Be.
Oh, will be.
Right. Understand?
Will be.
So if you project things and you...
We have backwards. It's like you work for delayed gratification and you work for...
Yeah. But the reason for all this is so that you can know that you have all kinds of memory that are based on this. They're all infiltrated or perverted by usury of that time. And what we're going to be doing here is I'm going to prove to you that every one of your memories is a lie. And also that all of your self-talk is a lie. You know, when you talk out loud right now, we if you talk, it's like 120 words a minute. You normally talk about that rate. If you think self, when you self-talk, we talked the other day that your throat muscles move. You form all the words when you're thinking, when you're talking to yourself, just like you do when you're speaking. They're just silent. So self-talk is silent talk, but you talk at the rate of 1,300 words a minute. Self-talk. All you're doing is compressing your bullshit. You're compressing your lies into littler time. And that's all self-talk is.
I was thinking today about, like you said, how communication is so fucked, not just that language is from the start, but you know, even the things you say are only about 10%. It's like, and even in a conversation, you're racing ahead of the next person. You have said so many things that by the time you get to the thing that actually comes out, you know, they don't understand what you mean because there was all that in there that you never said.
And plus, right, what you've done is you went into usury, so you were at a different time and place than they are when they stop their conversation.
Right. So what happens whenever you forget what you were going to say?
You're lucky.
If you're not careful, your heart will stop.
That also explains, too, why you can hear it going out fast.
You were way
faster. You're always hearing it, in a sense. So much of the time, you're always hearing it five times faster.
Well, I want to continue on this. We're going to continue on some more about usury, and then we're going to get into self-talk.
I want to say one more thing. So that part, this is where it comes from. I don't know if I've said this before here again, but I'll say it again. Is it in my bullshit world, to have pleasure in what you're doing equals sin?
And that's a
lie. It doesn't matter what you're doing.
So, well, but that's a lie.
It's like, I'm at work, I do feel like I sold that because I have pretty good time, generally.
Yeah. Well, that's a lie. So have fun, but you can enjoy having fun.
Yeah.
It's like Tyra has the idyllic job for her that could exist right now. But all of a sudden, in December, she started getting really freaked out because she started projecting and stuff she didn't think she could do. She almost got immobilized just by projecting. All the immobilization was that she had the debt had to be paid for the projection. And when that, you understand? When you come to the moment, there's nothing. I mean, have fun. Pleasure is spirit. Spirit is pleasure. Now, can you imagine what the Pharisees are going to say about that one? All I know is to love God and have fun and be free. If I have to be anything other than honest, God failed. And I promise you, he didn't fail. We are of those people that will risk everything for that. And last night was like a snapshot of what will happen when we go public. I mean, I wish you guys could have seen it.
Yeah,
we'll no, but you won't see the
stuff.
The behind the scenes.
I have a little secret.
Yeah.
I have one little secret.
I got the permission.
The producer told me that the reason that he had called was because he was going through the files of the newspaper clipping of Channel 13, and he said what stopped him was the fact that you were so good looking.
Oh, okay.
That's wretched vision.
Wretched.
Was he gay?
No.
Oh!
I was like,
oh! Was he gay?
Oh,
boy. Many would look good on here. Just
when I thought we were about to break up.
Oh!
So
Take it quickly.